The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue and today's Closing Day Features, episode 127 with Yabu Kamara. And she's going to be talking about how she was able to build her portfolio of close to 30 doors and the beginning processes of how she did it. So really, really amazing insight about persistence, about staying the course, about starting in areas that people say you shouldn't start in. But either way, let's get into it. The Black Real Estate Dialogue, Closing Day, episode 127. Let's get into it.
What I'm noticing already from the first deal, we haven't even talked about any other ones, is that you seem to be relentless and you don't take no for an answer. For example, when you were talking about how many banks do you think you called to try to get some financing?
I think it's probably more than 10 though. So I, even though I called most of the local banks, I still called like other banks, like Chase Banks. Yeah, PNC and all of that, but the local ones were more responsive.
Got it. So you called a number of banks, and the bank who told you it'll take this period of time, you're like, all right, I'll get the cars and do what y'all tell me to do, but I'm coming back with something that you can't refuse. So that's the first example. The second example is, you know, a lot of investors, especially new investors, and I fell into this boat too. You feel kind of shy at first, especially when you're dealing with a property manager. You kind of defer to them because you think they might know better than you, but eventually you're able to see that what they're saying is not adding up. And I've been through that too. Like, I've had to fire a property manager. Yeah. So I think it's great that you investigated and really dug into the numbers and into the information that they were giving you to check it. And I want people to understand that too. Like, you have a voice as well. Like, you can confront and ask questions to the property manager. And you really need to make sure that you're properly vetting the property manager. So I think it's great that you did those two things very early on. And also, you know, you could have just quit and said, you know what?
Yeah,
this is too much of a headache. I don't think real estate is for me. However, you decided to take that lesson and continue to move forward. Yep. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That property now, after once this fixed up, I make about, so I had Section 8 tenants in there. So every month I make like a little less than $2,000, I think like 1,900 and something. So almost $2,000, my mortgage, because I was so desperate with the bank. I said, don't even make it 30. Now I regret why I said that, but I was like, make it 15, I'll pay. So my mortgage is like 350 something a month, but I'm making like $2,000 there, a little less than $2,000. So I've been cash flowing that property. So a few months later, I'm like, I'm ready to repeat this again, but I'm not finding any deal. Of course, you're not going to find a deal like that again. Like, you might, but it's not always like that easy. So I was like, okay, at this point, I'm so interested. Like, it changed. I was like, even though the beginning was hard, now that seeing a property has appraised higher, 30, 40,000 over, and it's fixed up, and I'm having tenants coming in. And now it's like, I'm in business because the bank can see like a track record. She has three units that are cash flow. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this again because I know now they're not going to say, you know, and my credit is being built for the two extra 3 months, right? So it's like, where else from the podcasts and other interviews that I listen to when like my research, a lot of people say Cleveland is a landlord friendly city, right? Landlord friendly state. So I was like, maybe I should look into that. So I just started doing my research to Cleveland area. And I just reached out to people on like different platforms and say, hey, my name is Yamu. I'm a new real estate investor. I'm looking to invest in Cleveland. Do you have any advice or whatever? And a lot of people that I reach out to would say, hey, don't, welcome, but don't invest here. invest here. This is B area. This is B area. This is C area. Don't go D here. This is the war zone. But all the areas that are telling me, I just started working. I don't have the kind of money to invest in. Like, I have to look for something that works for me. So it's like the areas that are they're telling me not to invest in are the ones I can afford. And looking at it, it's like, you mean like the black area mostly?
That they were saying
that's what
the D area.
Yeah.
This is actually what they mean.
Yeah, but I didn't know this before. After I knew, yeah. I was like, I can live on this street. Like, all I see is people like me. Like, I can live here. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to listen. This is what I can afford. So I went ahead and I closed on the duplex. So there was a lady, she's a lawyer, and she has a construction company. So she gets properties from tax sales, then she will fix them up and rent them and rent them to Onkyi or sell it to Onkyi. So I was able to close on this deal for $68,000, right?
Wow.
And yeah, imagine my down payment, 20% of 68. So all in, I was like less than 15K or whatever. So I gave the bank the tenants' leases and everything. They new tenants. This is seven something upstairs, six something downstairs. It's a duplex, right? So even though people say it was a D area, it's a D, but C coming. It's coming to, it will be C area very soon, right? It's not that bad of a D. So I just went in. I know it's going to cash flow every month. I'm going to have my rents coming in every month and in Section A, right? And the tenants pay all the utilities. That property brings me about $1,350 since then, and I've never been to Cleveland. But the same people that were telling me, and like I could see from the mails that they sent me, the same people, I'm like, this is the same person I talked to. They're sending me a mail to buy that property for double what I bought it for. They're offering like $135,000, but I bought it for $68,000. When I'm like, this 7 months ago, you guys told me not to buy this house. And I'm like, I'm not selling it because I'm cash flowing. So what's the point of, if I want to refinance? Because I know if you're offering me $135,000 for something that I bought $68,000 less than a year ago, something's wrong, right?
Yep.
So, and I know, Even if I sell it to you at $135,000, what's your profit? I know there's something that you will make there. So whatever you're offering me, my house is not worth that. So I know my house is worth more than what you're offering me. So I never sell, but it's nice enough to call and say, okay, well, how much would you pay for it? Okay, we can close in 3 days. But I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'll think about it. But it's good for me to know how much it will sell for, how much it has appraised, right? So I don't listen. After that, I'm like, I'm not listening to anybody. I'm going to invest what makes, because whatever I'm doing works, right? So right now, I'm able to afford $100,000, $200,000, have a million dollar house because of those houses that I buy for cheap that people tell you not to buy. So I just don't listen. I'm not going to ask somebody who never invest in real estate about real estate. Because I had, when I started, like, so my third deal, I was buying cash at this point, like 10,000, 15,000 houses.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to the third deal, there's a couple of things I want to make sure that we take from what you just said. There are so many people who have this whole, oh, this is like a war zone, this, that, and the other. And typically it's where we live, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised that those same people who are trying to tell you not to invest in those areas were trying to buy your property in those areas. Yeah. And it's so important for us to invest in our communities, right? Invest in general, but especially in communities with people who look like us, because, you know, the reality of it is, like, the hood is not going to be the hood anymore. We're seeing it in every large city. You know, things are changing, gentrification, all these things. Like, you know, there's opportunity there, and we shouldn't turn away from opportunity and such great cash flow and being able to put good standards of housing just because somebody on the internet said this is not an A or B area. You know, sometimes you just got to trust your instinct, you got to trust your research and invest. So I'm really glad that you did that.
Yeah, thank you. So at that point, I've already have my second deal, the same bank, the same people, so it's like easy when I found a deal. So I was like, okay, at this point I think I'm ready to, like, I saw a deal for like 15K, so when I see houses like 15-13K, I'll just buy them and I'll just fix them with my contract for like 10K 12K. So even though I know I don't have $12,000 to pay him, right, I put in all my money to buy the house, so I don't even have any money to pay him, right? I know that, okay, Section 8 money is coming for the first of the month, so I know, okay, that I will at least get $3,000-$4,000 coming in, plus whatever my job pays me, and I'll pay the contract. So I'm not paying the contractor in full. So I know, okay, by the time the 2 weeks is done, after I give you this $5,000, by the time 2 weeks done, I will get another $5,000. So I was just like, because I know money is coming. I was like, okay, I'll pay you on the first. So mind you, at this time, I don't have anything. Everything I have, I felt like I was late because I worked so much and I didn't save anything. So coming, starting here, I'm like, I'm giving this my all. All my money goes in there. Like before closing, I'm checking, okay, what's the closing cost after the down payment? I'm only left with like, because the bank wants you to see at least some reserve. I'm struggling with the number. I'm like, okay, by the time we close, I think the, you know, it would buy the first. So I will calculate because I'm tight with money when I started. So after this point, I'm buying 13,000 houses, put in 7,000, put in on Section 8 for 1,500 because I'm buying 4 or 5 bedroom houses. And a lot of markets in that area, a lot of landlords are doing Section 8 that they don't go for like bigger houses because it's like, oh, they will tear up your house. Or because for me, my tenants pay all the utilities. If I have to pay for sewer, it's like every quarterly, I will still send you that bill. If it's really low, I'll just pay for it. But then if it goes higher, I give you like a limit and say, if it passed this is what you pay. But yeah, so I started buying cheap ones for cash. And then if I see a deal that's like more than what I have, more than what I don't want to put in, I would just go with the bank and I would take the Section 8 money and fix up that house as I go. So that's how I scaled.
Definitely. Is this still in Cleveland?
Yeah, so I did Cleveland and then Illinois area. I just do Midwest. I still live in Atlanta. Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.